mysterious powers. You have them. Everybody does. Powers of mind and spirit. Powers that cannot be explained. What's real and what isn't. What works and what doesn't. Join Anne Freeber in her investigations of everything from luck to health to miracles to mysteries of the mind. And now, here's Anne Freeber with Mysterious Powers Radio.
Welcome to my first Mysterious Powers special event, a powerful story of alien encounter that is backed up by some of the best UFO photos and video ever made. With us is Mysterious Powers regular UFO reporter, Brian Vike of HBCC UFO in Canada. Welcome, Brian.
Hi, Anne. How are you today?
Fine. And I want to welcome John Toasty to the show. John?
Hello. How you doing?
Fine. I'm doing great. I was incredibly impressed by that extraordinary UFO photo you took, and I think that the combination of your photos and the stories you have to tell are among the most remarkable and powerful close encounter experiences I've ever heard. You just don't get photos to go along with these stories very often. I remember how hard Whitley tried to get photos and just how much it would have meant if he'd succeeded. So listen up, folks. This is a man who's been very close to the unknown, and he's got the pictures to prove it. And now, Mysterious Powers UFO reporter Brian Vike is going to interview John. You know what makes a lot of...
folks out there, just give you about a 15-second little intro here. Anyway, John's story is one of a... it's just an amazing, ongoing... an encounter. You know, he's been through a lot of hardships, has brought to his himself, a family, friends. He's lost a lot due to the, you know, the unwelcome chain of events, and the story goes into an awful lot, and we're going to bring John on, and we're going to let him explain what has taken place in his life and what's happened to date. So welcome, John, and I will let you take it away.
Okay, Brian, thank you. Yeah, I've been through quite a bit. I had some missing time that happened to me back in 95, 96. Actually, wasn't really aware that I had any missing time. Went outside of the porch where I was living. South. I was living on a 163-acre farm, and I was getting ready to go hunting. Anyway, I noticed some lights in the sky early in the morning before I was going out to do a little scouting around for some deer. And this was probably, like I said, probably about 4, maybe 5 o'clock. It was still dark. It was in the wintertime. Noticed 3 lights above some trees. One central light was just kind of moving gingerly across the sky, just real slow, ever so slow. And then these two other objects, one was red, one was green, was doing kind of figure eights around this actual central object that was moving to the east, from the west to the east. Anyway, noticed that, and I really didn't get back into the woods because I kind of just sat there and watched this for about, a good 3 or 4 minutes. I sat there kind of dumbfounded and was going to talk to my fiancée at the time about what was going on, but she really didn't understand what was happening at the time. Anyway, I decided I elected not to go back into the woods that morning, the next morning afterwards, me and a buddy of mine named Jim, he came over the next morning at about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. We got all dressed up and got our flashlights together, got all our equipment together out on the porch, seen the same exact thing the next morning, about 4 o'clock in the morning, same time. Jim looked at me, I looked at Jim. Jim was like, you know, what is that? And I'm like, I really don't know. So we sat there and we watched the same lights go across the sky from... from west to east, I think it was, elected to go back into the woods and go ahead and do some scouting, do some hunting for some deer that morning. Walked back into the woods. No sooner than we got into the woods, I noticed there was kind of a funny orange glow coming from the woods. It was it's one particular place that had kind of a really like a big gully that kind of hit a lot of like little rocks and things. It was kind of like a hideout for like coyotes and things. Yeah, anyway, started walking back to that place. Got to a point where I could actually see, it looked like a orange ball. I thought it was the moon setting. That's what I thought at first. I thought, well, there's the moon's setting. Me and Jim talked about it for a few seconds, and it was like, there's the moon, it's setting. That's the moon. And then I started to think about it. I was like, well, the moon had set hours ago, and in the opposite direction anyway, So I really didn't know what this was. And anyway, we got a little closer, and I started to think about it, and I was getting ready to talk to Jim about it, and I said, I think I said a couple words to him about, you know, this couldn't be the moon. I don't know what. As soon as I had that thought and getting it out to Jim, this thing just went out. And as soon as it went out, it there was two, like, people, humanoids, I would say. I don't know if they were humans. Maybe aliens is a better word for it. They had lights on top of their heads, and at first I thought they were hunters. I thought maybe, well, these are hunters that are on my property right now. They've got these lights on their heads. They're trying to get to the woods to do a little hunting, but they're legally trespassing. I've posted signs all the way around my property. Anyway, I kind of got back behind a big tree. I grabbed Jim. Me and Jim kind of shoveled behind a big tree because I didn't want to get shot at. Sometimes, some of these hunters around here anyway, they have a particular problem with just pulling up their gun and taking a shot, whether they could see the thing or not. We sat there. I watched them as they started walking our way. So I got down on my on my hands and knees, and I kind of coaxed Jim to get down on his hands and knees and put the tree between us and them, because I didn't think, I didn't know for sure who it was, and if they were going to take a shot, I didn't want Jim to get hurt. I didn't want to get hurt. So we ended up, they started getting really close and then closer and closer, and so I got down on my belly, and Jim got on his belly too as well, and I was peeking around this big tree, and I could just see them coming. You could hear the leaves and the branches cracking as they were walking, coming toward us. Got back, and I looked at Jim just for a few seconds, and I went to look back around again, and they were right there. They were right on top of us, and they looked down with their lights on top of their heads and blinded me for a few seconds, and the next thing I know, it's daylight.
John, if I could interrupt just for a minute.
Sure.
At that point, there are a couple of little things to back up on. When you seen the big orange ball of light into the trees, you and Jim were observing that. Now, did that thing light up the whole forest or that general area when you seen it?
It was just that general area.
And when you seen these figures coming at that point, in the distance, because they only had those little lights like coal miners would have on top of their hard hats. That's all you could see at that point, eh?
Right, that's all I could see.
Just little lights. And then when they got back to the tree, sort of came around the side, but did you see any kind of features at all to these figures at all?
Well, the only thing that I noticed was that the bright light from the top, the heads, they had these lights on top of their heads. That's the only thing that I could really, they blinded me. They both blinded me. Actually, one for sure that blinded me with this light. And I kind of noticed maybe a little, the figure a little bit. It was about 6 foot tall, and it had maybe some sort of a helmet on or something, or something that just didn't look right at the time.
Right.
I didn't really sink in at first, but, now that I look back at it, they had some sort of a, at least that one had one, some sort of a helmet on or something. And it had a light on it, so, but anyway, it was more or less being blinded, so I'm not so sure about the helmet, at the time and things like that, so,
yep,
but that's all I could see.
Carry on, and John, it's an excellent story, I'll tell you.
Well, after that happened, it was daylight, it just seemed like it was nighttime, and, it was actually early morning. And it was really dark, and here these lights are shining, this one light shining in my eyes, blinding me. The next thing I know, it's daylight, and I'm like 50 feet away from where I was just at, and my friend Jim, he's about 50 yards away or so, across the creek in a briar patch, waving his hands at me. And I had a little trickle of blood coming down my left nostril, and I didn't have my gun. I was looking for my gun. I couldn't find my gun. I went over to help Jim. Helped him get out of the briar patch. We walked over. I looked around. I seen a pile of leaves. I went kicking around on this pile of leaves, and sure enough, our guns were in these pile of leaves. So we got our guns back. We started to walk back to the barn. We didn't have much conversation about what we just experienced. We didn't know what we experienced. It was more confusion than anything else. We got back to the barn. We took off our gear and things, and Jim was kind of like, don't tell anybody about this kind of thing. He didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what was going on. We didn't know to check the time. We didn't know. I had no conscious thought about UFOs or aliens or anything like that. it was just, you know, we had these strange sightings of these, you know, three lights that were, you know, over the top of these trees. I had them for two mornings in a row, actually. And then, you know, the second morning that I'd seen them, Jim was with me, and then when we walked back in the woods, we have this really strange encounter with this ball of light that's down in the gully, and then it goes out, and then two people, you know, two beings with lights on their heads come walking our way, and the next thing I know, bright lights in my face, they're standing right on top of us, and it's daylight. The next thing, you know, next time I have a conscious thought, it's daylight, you know, and
yeah.
it was just strange.
Yo, I know it definitely is. I've heard that this is one of those stories. This is almost a classic of what it is.
You know what makes a lot of sense? A subscription to unknowncountry.com.
Now on Mysterio.
Back sort of now. You're back and you're getting your gear off so far from your hunting and after this whole event took place. And then, what's your relationship with Jim now? How have things worked out since the event and the experience took place? Are you guys still close together, or close friends, or is it sort of drifted apart, or anything like that?
We drifted apart. I think that really we used to be we used to hunt and fish. We used to do everything. We were outdoor type of people. I mean, Jim, he's been an outdoorsman all his life. So have I. We grew up that way. Actually, my father, he was a very outdoorsy type, and so was his father. And anyway, until that incident happened, I mean, we were really close. You know, we've really done a lot of things together, and we enjoyed each other's company. Now we don't talk. So.
Yeah, and you know, it seems like, you know, with a lot of cases I deal with, this is the kind of thing that seems to happen where, you know, a couple of good friends or whatnot will have such a good relationship, and all of a sudden they'll go through some traumatic event, and then slowly the two will drift apart to where they don't even speak anymore, and there's no reason for it other than sharing this one major experience. So it's quite disturbing, actually, to know that, you know,
right,
that some people are that close but can be, you know, led in different directions because of something
right.
like this.
Right, exactly.
So anyways, carry on. You're doing fine.
After we had this experience, I didn't know. I was trying to explain it to Heidi, my fiance, my ex-fiance at the time. Well, she is now. Anyway, she was my fiance at the time. Excuse me. Anyway. She really didn't understand what I was talking about. She didn't, you know, she was confused. I was confused. I didn't know what was going on. Like I said before, I was into my work, my job. I was trying to work the ladder to work myself way up, you know, and try to make it, you know, as best I can at the job I was working at. And so I had no thought of aliens or UFOs or anything that had anything to do with, you know, anything like that. So it was, you know, it was confusing to me. I didn't understand it, and it seemed almost as if I lost my mind a little bit after that. Didn't really lose my mind, just couldn't figure out what was going on. Anyway, I lost me and Heidi. We didn't make it. We had a son, and anyway, we started to have more sightings around the house, and after a while, Heidi decided she didn't want to be a part of it. She was scared, and I was scared too as well, but she took my son and herself, and she split. She took off, and she says that she didn't want to be with me anymore because she was afraid, and which I totally understood. And I, you know, now that I look back at it, she's a very good mother. I understand what her intentions were, but at the time, I needed her at the time, and it wasn't a good thing for me. But you know, now that I look back at it, it was good for her and my son, you know, to get away from it. And anyway, I couldn't see my son for the longest time because she didn't want any part of it. She thought I was going crazy, as a matter of fact. Things like that. She knew things were happening, but she just didn't know exactly what. Anyway, 3 or 4 months, maybe 5 months down the road, I met my wife now, Susan. And anyway, me and Susan got together, and we were friends at first, and she helped me out a lot. She got me through a lot of things that was really, I mean, devastating to me, especially me losing my family because of this. And I didn't really tell her off, you know, off the bat when we met, you know, as friends, even that, you know, what had happened to me and this and that. And so anyway, I asked her if she'd seen any UFOs. That was my kind of like my maybe third or fourth question, you know, as a friend I was asking her at the time. And she said she'd seen one UFO. She didn't really know what it was, and that was about it. So I asked her, I said, well, I know this particular place that we can go and we can see some UFOs. And so she went with me. We went in her car, actually, and we took off. And we went down to this certain part of southern Indiana, Bloomington, actually. It's a farm. It's actually old country roads leading to this big farm, big dairy farm. And anyway, we started to see what looked like shooting stars, except when they would come down, they'd go right above the trees and they would stop. And they would either move to the left or to the right. And they'd done that quite often. And then the car lights inside the car started to flash off and on. And it kind of spooked me. It spooked Susan at the time. And we decided to take off, to go ahead and leave. And so that kind of brought us closer together, I think. And she was like, well, you're going to need a camera. We started to get a little bit more intimate at that time whenever we went out there. And anyway, she said that we needed a camera. She needed to get me a camera so I could document the evidence so people would believe us, you know, so they wouldn't think that we were liars or crazy, especially our family. That was the main thing, was our families thinking that we were crazy or nuts. But anyway, later on down the road, she got me a camera. It wasn't probably a few days, maybe a week or so later, she got me a camera. And she said, well, go document the evidence. So she gave me this camera for Christmas. And at that time, we were pretty much together. We were being a couple. And anyway, the first night that I had the camera, it was about 11 o'clock. And I decided I was going to go out to the farm and do some videotaping. And so I took off and went to this farm. I didn't even get to the farm. I got about halfway there, and I seen a ball of light that was hovering right above the trees. Actually, the same tree line that I had seen before. And so I started to chase this ball of light, and it took me down some old country roads. It ended up at the same place, this old farm that was, you know, it was considered a dairy farm. But the strange thing about this farm was it's never had any cows, any kind of cattle or anything, any livestock on it, ever. Anyway, I got to the point where I'm sitting right beside this farm. I start to videotape this light that's kind of hanging out beside the tower. The tower's kind of flashing off and on. And so I pulled up the video camera and I start videotaping. And I noticed that just a few minutes into it, I noticed that I feel a cool breeze coming from my left side. Of course, it's wintertime. It's like the 23rd of December, 24th. And I noticed like a cool breeze coming in. And I looked just off to my, you know, left. And I noticed that somehow my window got rolled down. Don't ask me how it got rolled down, but somebody had rolled my window down. It wasn't me. I was busy videotaping. I didn't even hear the motor of the window, because it was electric windows. I didn't even hear the motor, you know, go off to make the window go down. It was just all of a sudden the window was down. And then I thought I heard, and all the time I'm still videotaping, I thought I heard like cloth rubbing together. And I thought I seen something move to the back of the car, but I'm not really sure. All I remember is really for sure that I heard cloth rubbing together. Well, I thought I'd only been there for 15 minutes, so I decided 15 minutes worth of video, this is probably, you know, good enough to get some evidence to show our family members that, you know, we're not crazy, you know, whenever we talk. We're trying to express what was going on with us at the time, what we'd been seeing, and I was trying to express what had happened to me, to my family. Anyway, got home, and started to walk through the door, and I noticed Susan, she's standing in kind of like the kitchen kind of doorway kind of thing, coming from the living room to the kitchen. And she's looking at me, and she's got a really mad look on her face, and I'm like looking at her like, what, you know, what's the problem? I get through the door, and she's like, where have you been? And immediately she jumped, you know, get on my case, and I'm like, well, what's wrong, honey? She goes, where have you been? I said, well, honey, what? I've only been gone 15 minutes, maybe 20 tops, something like that. She goes, you've been gone for 5 hours. And I didn't believe her at first. I thought she was lying. I thought she was joking with me. And I walked into the kitchen, and I looked at the time, and yeah, I had been gone for 5 hours. And anyway, I told her, I said, Susan, you got to believe me, honey. I've been out videotaping, because she thought I was out messing around, you know, or whatever, you know. I've been gone for 5 hours. Here it is. It's, you know, it's early in the morning now. And so I tell her, I said, well, let me show you the videotape. It's only got 15 minutes worth of videotape, you know, that I caught last night, you know. And so let me show that to you, because I know that, you know, I've only been gone for 15 minutes. She goes, well, you've been gone for about 5 hours. Anyway, I popped in the VCR. Well, actually, I had the camera, and I hooked it up to the VCR with those cables. And started to play the videotape that I just caught, you know, that I thought I just caught 15 minutes ago anyway. It's actually been 5 hours. And anyway, she started to watch it. I got up to use the restroom, and she, what's that? And I turned around and go, what's what? And she goes, what was that? What did you see that? And I said, no, honey, I didn't see it. So she went back to the beginning of the tape, and she played it again. She goes, look, in the upper left-hand corner, she goes, look at this. And this red, what I call a rod, some people maybe call it a wand, I'm not sure. It's a red, I call it a rod. It comes through the view of the camera, and actually it's going through my hand, and it ends up in front of the camera, so the camera picks it up. And it's this red glowing rod-type instrument, an alien instrument of some sort, that has some sort of white, some sort of something that paralyzes. I know that. It goes through this tube, which is like a rod, this white kind of like chemistry. I don't know what it is exactly. It comes all the way to this tube to the end of it. And then when it comes to the end of it, it kind of lifts back through my hand. And anyway, at that time, I remember that my hand went numb. And my hand kind of went, a feeling of going to sleep kind of thing. And that's all I remembered of it. But then she started playing it more and more to look at it more, and I started remembering more and more about what had happened to me. And that, you know, something actually stuck that through. It was some sort of a being stuck that through my hand and paralyzed me and ripped me out of the car window and threw me on the ground beside the car. And this blue-white light just shimmered all around me. And on the car, all the way around me, and then bam! The next thing I know, instead of taping one UFO, I'm taping two UFOs, and that's all I can remember of it. So, but I don't think I was supposed to see this red rod, because when I came home, we opened up the curtains, and I noticed that something had followed me home. And about after freaking out quite a bit after the red rod incident, not knowing exactly what was going on at the time, I knew that I had some missing time. I knew that this red rod type instrument went through my hand and somehow paralyzed me. I knew that I was dropped on the ground. I was ripped through my window and dropped on the ground, actually, and this blue white light kind of just shimmered all the way around the car. I knew all these things, but I didn't know exactly what happened after that. But after coming to that realization and seeing, opening the curtains and seeing a couple objects and just having this really strange feeling of thinking that, you know, feeling that these things, they followed me home. A week later, afterwards, I was staying up. I mean, at that time, I was staying up from when the sun would come up or go down, I would stay up all the way up until the sun would come up again. I would get no sleep. I lost my job because of it. I was hiding my family, my wife. I was just kind of hiding her out, and at that time she was. We were having a baby girl. We were having a baby, Ivy. She's now 8 years old. It just progressed into these just really strange occurrences that would happen in the house, and usually that would happen outside the house. These ships that would show up, and they would have this blue glimmering, you know, kind of a white blue light that would show up either right in the back door or to the side where the barn's at, and everything inside the house would go out, completely out. And anyway, it got to the point where I would hide my wife, my newborn daughter, Ivy, in a closet, and, you know, from when the sun would go down until it would come up, and I would guard it with a gun, usually. And so it just got really insane. I mean, I lost my job. I already lost the family before that. It was hard to get to sleep usually through the day. I wasn't used to that. I mean, I was really losing. I was really on the edge of just really losing myself. And so, but we were documenting as much as we possibly could at the time because we didn't know what was going on. I mean, we kind of knew a little bit about what was going on at that time because we could see the ships. They were hovering above our barn, over our horses and things in the backyard. Anyway, I went to go get some help. After a while, it just got so ridiculous. My wife, she was like, "You got to get some help," and I was like, "I know. I need something to help me sleep." And so I went to it's kind of a branch of the hospital where they evaluate you, your mental status of, you know, what kind of person, if you're delusional or anything like that. I just went there because I was directed there because I told the person I talked to on the phone that I wanted to get some medication to help me sleep. So they directed me over there. I talked to some lady, and I told her about what was, you know, I really couldn't tell anybody. I felt like this is maybe the first chance that I could really talk to somebody about what's going on and really, you know, they could help me out. And I started to tell her what was going on, and she said, well, let's go talk to the doctor. He'll get you some medication that'll help you sleep, and, you know, he'll help you out. Let's just go walk over to the hospital, because it was across the road from the hospital. So we walked over to the hospital. We got in the elevator. We went up to the fifth floor, and I walked out and stepped out of the elevator, and she stepped out with me, and then I was greeted by two guys that were in all white uniforms. And anyway, I turned around and turned to look to her, and she kind of backstepped back into the elevator, and the elevator doors kind of closed. They closed. Anyway, I was looking for the button for the elevator. Instead of having buttons for the elevator, it had a keyhole where you had to have a stick an actual key into the socket of this thing for the elevator to work. And then I found out, after talking with these guys, actually getting pretty upset about it, because they grabbed me and they were wanting to take my vitals. That's the first thing they do, is take your vitals. I found out that they were sticking me in this mental institution at the hospital, and that I had to wait 24 hours for the doctor to show up before they could evaluate me to see, you know, what my mental, you know, how, if I was crazy or delusional or, you know, what have you. So, at that time, I was pretty upset. I mean, I didn't know what to think. Here I was, and I'm stuck in the mental institution. You know, I got to wait for the doctor for 24 hours. I got to wait for this doctor to show up before he evaluates me and things. And my wife, she's all alone now at home and things. So, I rant and rave, and I tell them that I want to call her and see how everything's going and, you know, this and that. So, I call Susan, and I tell her where I'm at. She's like totally dumbfounded. She's like, you know, beside herself, actually. She's like, what are you doing in there? And I told her, I just wanted to get some help. And she goes, yeah, I know, but why are you in there? And I said, well, some woman walked me across the road, and the next thing I know, you know, I'm here. And, you know, I thought I was just going to get some medication from this doctor. And anyway, she wanted to talk to some other people that were working there, some people in charge there, and there wasn't really anything they could do until the doctor showed up the next day. So I got some sleep. I mean, I really didn't get much sleep there. I woke up the next morning. Actually, I was waking up by a guy that had some medication, actually in syringe, that he was going to give to me. I really didn't know what it was all about, and he gave me a shot of some sort of a drug. And anyway, it was about 15 minutes, and I found myself to where I couldn't even pick myself up off, kind of like I was laying down kind of on a table with my head down, waiting for my wife to show up and the doctor to show up. And I couldn't even pick my head up off the table because I was so drugged. They drugged me before the doctor got there and before my wife got there. And anyway, my wife showed up, and she brought some tapes. And she came all the way up, and she was, and then the doctors, there was like three or four of them that were behind her, and she said, listen, my husband is not delusional, he's not crazy, you know, he's not schizophrenic. She said, just get a VCR, get a TV, let me show you what he's seeing, what he's talking about. And so they got a TV, they got a VCR, they brought it into this little conference room, they brought us all in there. I was already in there because my head was laying down on the table. I couldn't move, actually. They drugged me so much that I could barely talk. And anyway, Susan gave one of the doctors the tape, and she goes, look at this one. And so they popped the videotape in there, and they started to watch it. The lady was there, actually, as well, that one that brought me over for the first time. Anyway, they started to watch. It was like three or four of them. They watched about 5 minutes of the tape. They turned it off, and one of them looked over at us, and they were kind of shrugged their shoulders and said, well, Mr. Tosti, there's nothing we can do for you. And they let me go, and I took off, and my wife, she had to put me in the back seat because I was so drugged. I didn't know what I was doing. And anyway, they never followed up. They never did anything about it. They just kind of, you know, shunned us away, actually. We were trying to find out what was going on, and they really didn't want to talk to us anymore. So anyway, it was one of those deals is where, you know, I really felt like I was all alone. I mean, I felt like I couldn't turn to nobody. I mean, you know, it's just like every time that I did turn, you know, at that one time, I was put in the mental institution, you know. So anyway, we started to have what seemed like a bunch of helicopters, a bunch of military helicopters flying over the top of our house all the time. And we got scared. We noticed that we seen like people starting to follow us around here and there, you know, just ever so, you know, every once in a while it seemed like somebody was following us. We'd always see this same kind of an SUV just following us everywhere. We'd see it everywhere, you know, when we went to town to go grocery shopping, then we'd go to the mall, you know, buy things or whatever. We'd see this same SUV. So we had started having strange phone calls. We were having, you know, SUVs following us around. We decided that it was time to maybe possibly talk with somebody, you know, to the public, actually, you know, like the papers or a news organization of some sort. So we set up something with Channel 6 News here, WRTV Channel 6 News, a woman, let's see, what was her name, Grace Trahan. That was the lady that came down with her cameraman. And we'd done a little segment on UFOs. We didn't talk about the alien abduction or anything like that, but we were just worried. We didn't know what was going on. We thought maybe we started to hear some of these stories and reading stories about maybe government, you know, taking people and things and questioning them and all kinds of weird stuff. So we wanted to make sure that people that we were and what we were, you know, talking about and things, so maybe it would, you know, slack off and maybe, you know, nothing would happen to us as far as the government was concerned. So, but I'm not so sure it was the government now that I look back at it. I imagine a lot of it was the helicopters and things, but some of this other thing, I don't know who it was. Strange phone calls, things like this. But anyway, we went on television and you know, on Channel 6 News, and we talked about UFOs, and that was it. I mean, as a matter of fact, the camera guy that was there, he was filming this thing. He had like three or four batteries, and I think one battery was good for like two or three hours. And he kept on saying, "Oh, that's funny." And he would change his battery out, and he put another one in. He's like, "This don't make sense," like that. And he said it like two or three times. And he looked up at us, at me and my wife. He goes, "It's really funny." He said, "All the batteries I have, like three of them now." He said, "I should have at least 6 hours of time, you know, to tape this or so." He said, "You know, I'm on my last battery now, and it's about to go dead too. So we better hurry up and do this, or we're not going to get it today." And anyway, after we'd done the interview, he said it was the strangest thing he'd ever seen, and he'd never witnessed anything like that before. And so we had baby monitors, and we noticed that I had a strange, funny-looking spot on the back of my neck. And so we started to videotape this scar on the back of my neck, and started to notice every time I would go past the baby monitor, it would just really short out sound. It had kind of a high-pitched sound, like feedback through it. And didn't really know what it meant at first. And then I finally picked it up, and I started rubbing it on the back. Don't ask me why. I started rubbing it on the back of my neck. And we set up the camera to capture this. And anyway, every time I would hit this one spot where the scar was, this thing would just, I mean, so much feedback on it. It was just ridiculous. I mean, I caught it. As a matter of fact, Brian, I'm sending you a videotape. It's already on its way, and you'll see what I'm talking about. It's just, every time I get to this spot, it shorts this thing out. It's just a lot of feedback. And anyway, something, obviously, they put something in my neck, and, you know, an implant of some sort, maybe. I don't know. You know, I'm not, like I said, I was, at the time, I was still new to the whole game. I didn't know anything about, you know, I was just now coming into it. And anyway, it was something else. I mean, after that was that, you know, all this was going on and things, we were dealing with our family members. Our family members were, you know, they were thinking that we were crazy, we were nuts and everything else. And it got really, really complicated, really frustrating, because it was so confusing to all the other people. And we were just now realizing what was going on. We were trying to tell people, you know, that what was going on, you know, this is true, this is real, this is really happening to us. You know, we've seen a couple books, we've seen like a movie and a documentary, you know, and that's the first time we ever looked at anything like that before. And we're like, yeah, that's what's going on with us. But it was a little different, you know, just a little different as far as some of the abductions that we read about and, you know, some of the sightings that we've seen on the documentaries and things. So, but anyway, we just...
How much actual footage have you got now of everything you've taken?
I probably have at least 8 to 10 hours worth of footage of UFOs and strange occurrences inside the house and the red rod, and just documented as best we could, about 8-10 hours. So
I mean, incredible melody.
Yeah, it's. I mean, there's some really, I like the video that we sent off to you, Brian. There's some video on there that, you know, I think that you're really gonna like. There's one that was completely vertical in the sky. You could see the bottom of the ship. When I first got to it, I thought it was the moon at first because it was so bright, and then it just dimmed down just a little bit, and then I thought it was a star. Anyway, I pulled off, and I jumped out of my car, and I started videotape it, and you could see it's the bottom of the ship, and there's like individual lights inside of this circle, and anyway, it's the bottom of the ship is what I'm filming. At the time, I didn't know that. And anyway, it starts to come down in front of me, and it starts the ship, instead of seeing the individual lights, you start to see it changing form, and then it turns into a big blue white light of just nothing but circular blue white light. It's the rim of the actual UFO that's coming down in front of me, and then you can see the dome behind it as it's coming down at it's like at a 45 degree slant. And I turn on my lights. And as soon as I turn on my lights, I catch a little bit more of it, and then it starts to flash, and it starts to move. But it's the strangest thing. You know, there's more video. There's daytime footage that I've caught. It's just, there's all kinds of footage that I, you know, I really don't know what's going on, but I know there's something happening. Like, military jets, I film, like, military helicopters with no markings, some of them black. Fly right over our house, so close to our house that, you know, you can see the pilots, you know.
You're not on a normal flight path, are you?
No, not at all. We've never had anything like this. As a matter of fact, Susan's lived here all her life, and they've never seen military helicopters, you know, or jets, for that fact, fly over the top of these houses like they have been since we've been seeing these things. I mean, she can vouch for that. She's lived here all her life. And she was like, this is strange. I've never seen anything like this before. And, you know, it was. I mean, they were flying right over the top of our house. I mean, the helicopters were so close that, you know, it was like, I don't know, some of the shingles on top of the house would kind of raise up, you know, from the wind of the helicopter. I mean, it was ridiculous. It was so close. It made me nervous. So, anyway, we didn't know what to do. So I just started videotaping the thing, you know. I mean, what else can I do, you know? So
exactly. Well, you're doing the right thing because you're getting the evidence that, you know, needed, because there's a lot of people out there still, of course, who do not, you know, believe this is going on. There's
right.
a lot of people who know what's going on because they're going through the experiences like yourself. So, I mean, right. you can't ask for anything better than to grab some of the, you know, some of the hard evidence in the way of photographs, video footage, so forth, you know, to document all this stuff and get it all out into the public eye to say, look, it is happening. It actually helps other people in a big, huge way, because those people don't feel like they're such alone in all this. Because a lot of them still write and they'll say, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard anything like this before, and I said, yes, constantly. And they feel so good because, hey, I'm not the only one. Because they
right.
don't want to talk about it, because they're afraid to come out and say anything, and maybe the ridicule factor, so forth. So
right.
it's what you've done is a great service to not only yourself, but to a lot of other people, John.
Well, I hope so. I mean, that's what I want to do. I mean, I know there's more people out there that are, you know, going through the same thing right as we speak. You know, they're going through the same thing as I've been through, and many others have gone through. And, you know, at the time, I've said this before, I felt so alone. I mean, you know, there was nobody that I could talk to. I was so afraid that they were going to put me back into the mental institution, you know, and drug me or something, or, you know, whatever. And I didn't know what to do. I mean, I really didn't. I spent a long time just holding it all in. I mean, it just, you know, I didn't want to talk about it anymore. And, you know, me and my wife, we would talk about it here and there, and, you know, and we felt, and my wife too, I mean, she felt so alone. Her mom had seen something, you know, and her mom kind of had an interest, but then, you know, her mom was like, you know, like everybody else, they don't want to be, you know, pointed at, you know, and things, and, you know, ridiculed for it and things like that. You know, it's really hard. And if I can help anybody, you know, that's the thing. The thing that is that people have got to talk about it. They got to talk to somebody about it, you know, to get it out. And it feels so much better when I sit here like I'm doing now. I'm talking with you, you know, and talking about what had happened to me. And it's like good therapy for me. It feels feels good to get it out, and it feels good to know that other people, you know, believe me, you know, and believe my family. Because, you know, like you said, there's a lot of people out there that doesn't think it's true, that, you know, still, in disbelief and things. I can see where those people are coming from, because at the time before all this happened, before me and Jim walked back into the woods, I felt the same way. You know, I felt that, you know, these people, I really didn't really think about it much. That was the thing. But that I had conscious thoughts, you know, I thought about it maybe once or twice, you know, in my lifetime before that happened. You know, and it's like, you know, there's just no, you know, there's so many people that are saying that it's not true. And then you've got these, you know, a few people are saying, yeah, I've experienced this. I never thought in my entire life, you know, that I would ever be the person saying, yes, this is true. I experienced it myself. But here I am. I'm talking with you. And, you know, I'm out there and I'm telling people that are listening, you know, this has happened to me. And it wasn't a pleasant experience. And by no means did I ever want it to happen to me and my family. But it did. It's changed my life. And there's nothing I could do about that. And actually, I'm glad that it's happened out there, that it did happen this way. I'm glad if it was going to happen the way it happened, I'm glad it happened to me the way it happened to me. I don't know if that makes sense, but I'm glad that I've seen what I've seen. I'm glad that I know what I know now. Because, you know, these people that are skeptical about what's going on, they're missing it. You know, they're not, it's like, I get around these people and I've talked to a few of them and it's like, I feel as though I know something you don't, but I'm trying to tell you this, but you're not listening, you know.
Right.
And that gets really frustrating, you know, and I've talked to people like that and it's really frustrating, especially when you know, you're having your, you know, 6-year-old child, 7-year-old child saying, yeah, you know, daddy's seen things and so have I, you know, and they're not listening to my child. My child's getting upset. You know, and it's just, that's how my life has changed. I mean, you know, I wasn't looking for that in my life, for my kids or for me, but that's what happened to us.
Well, so, John, this is an incredible story. And it's a familiar one, too. And, you know, I think all those sarcastic, nasty people, they don't understand how hard this is. I mean, you lost your best friend and your fiancé and your son.
Exactly.
And nobody would choose to do this.
No, that was, you know, that I had no intentions of losing my friend, you know, my family. I lost my family.
Yeah, I mean, people seem to think, people are always saying, oh, these people are just doing it to get attention. But people who say that have done no research. They have met no people who have really had experiences, because it's very tough. And your life is changed forever.
Right.
And in a way, it's good because you know a little more, but in a way, it's bad because you become a shunned person.
Right.
And
yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm just so glad that you talked to us about this. And Brian, I'm so glad you brought this to us. And I want to say to our listeners that if you want somebody to talk to, write to Brian Vike at hbccufo@telus.net. That's hbccufo@telus.net. Because remember, you're not alone. Thanks, Brian, and thanks, John, for being with us. It was a wonderful report. This has been Ann Strieber with a Mysterious Powers special event. Be sure and listen to Mysterious Powers every 2 weeks. This week, one of Dreamland's most popular guests, Echo Bodine, is with us to talk about how